How Oil Companies Avoid Distress. Welcome to this audio issue of Distressed Investing, published and copyrighted by Porter & Company. All rights reserved. Please note that this recording was generated via AI and may contain minor transcription errors and pronunciation mistakes. Throughout this issue, I may reference charts, graphs, and imagery that can only be viewed on our website at porterandcompanyresearch.com. In past years, plunging energy prices invariably spawned a full-blown crisis. Distressed oil bonds reached saturation, but next time, expect less inundation. Martin Fritzen mounting tensions between the U.S. and Iran have helped push oil prices higher. The West Texas Intermediate, WTI, price has reached $66 per barrel, up 16% from $57 per barrel at the end of 2025. That's good news for companies with earnings that are highly sensitive to those prices, namely, oil and gas producers and oil services companies. Those bond issuers probably won't be offering a lot of new opportunities for distressed investors anytime soon. At $66 per barrel, though, the WTI price remains below its $72.47 average of the past 40 years. In years past, that $72 per barrel price was low enough to cause energy companies to be overrepresented in the distress ratio. The percentage of bonds in the ICE Bank of America U.S. High Yield Index yielding 10 percentage points or move above U.S. Treasuries. The graph below shows that the distress ratio finished January at 5.5%, little changed from December 2025. Consider, for example, the distressed universe's composition 12 years ago, on November 28, 2014, when the WTI price also stood at $66. At that time, energy accounted for 16% of all high-yield bonds but 21% of distressed bonds. In contrast, currently energy issues are underrepresented rather than overrepresented in the distressed ranks, accounting for 11% of outstanding high-yield bonds but only 3% of distressed issues. This change isn't a random outcome. Energy companies have altered their behavior in recent years in an effort to tamp down the boom and bust pattern that historically characterized their earnings and stock valuations. In the past, they responded to surging prices by aggressively stepping up their capital spending to increase how much oil and gas they could sell in the new, higher margin environment. But often their timing was off. By the time the added production came on stream, prices had fallen. Now energy companies are showing restraint in adding capacity when energy prices jump. Instead of automatically plowing extra cash into capacity expansion, they're placing greater emphasis on returning capital to shareholders. Reflecting this revised strategy, oil and gas producers have not rushed to respond to U.S. President Donald Trump's drill, baby, drill exhortations. Even if producers remain disciplined to avoid exacerbating the market's cyclicality, investors shouldn't expect oil prices to lose their cyclicality altogether. Demand for fuel will still vary with economic conditions, and geopolitical shocks will continue to affect prices. But if the WTI price drops to $50 per barrel as in November 2015, we don't think energy bonds will represent a proportion on the order of the 63% of the distressed universe, as they did at that time. This change should benefit the buyers of distressed oil and gas issues going forward. In a market less saturated with bonds of a single industry, valuations will likely recover more swiftly once the outlook for energy prices starts to improve. Portfolio update. Marty Fritzen and his team review 9 distressed investing recommendations, 6 distressed equities and 3 bonds. Mercer's weakness likely to end. In 2026, on December 17, Moody's lowered Mercer International's, NASDAQ, Merck, corporate debt rating from B2 to Ka2 based on what the ratings agency believes will be another weak year for producers of pulp and lumber. Its outlook for Mercer is stable. As we discussed in our report on Mercer earlier this month, Mercer reported weak results for the quarter that ended December 31. Revenue in the pulp business fell 11% to $334 million, and for the lumber business, revenue was flat at $110.2 million, compared with $111.6 million in the same period last year. The operating loss for the quarter was $20 million as compared with operating profit of $99 million last year. The company ended the quarter with $430 million in liquidity, $187 million in cash and $243 available to borrow. We believe that Mercer's operating results will bottom out in 2026 and begin to move up in 2027. We also see potentially significant upside from a carbon capture business at Mercer's Peace River facility in Canada. The company has comfortable liquidity to carry it to that point, and as detailed in our report, it also has a variety of moves it could take if it needs additional cash. We continue to recommend shares of Mercer International, currently trading at $1.89, up to $2.25 per share. We also recommend Mercer's 5.125% bonds due February 1, 2029, currently trading at $630, up to the price of $650. AMC Entertainment issues new debt. On February 23, AMC Entertainment, NYSE, AMC, announced it was issuing $1.73 billion in new bonds to be secured by the company's assets, maturing in 2031. The company intends to use these proceeds, plus a newly arranged $750 million bank loan maturing in 2031, to pay off its $2 billion bank loan due in January 2029 and $400 million of 12.875% secured bonds due in November 2027. In light of weaker-than-expected box office sales, revenue for the quarter fell 1.4% to $1.3 billion. Operating profit declined 18.8% to $134 million as compared with $165 million in 2024. AMC generated $43 million in free cash flow and ended the quarter with $428 million in cash. For 2025, revenue rose 4.6% to $4.8 billion, and operating profit increased 12.6% to $388 million. AMC's operations used $367 million of cash in 2025, as compared with a use of $296 million in 2024. On the conference call discussing its results, management indicated that box office revenue in January was up 16% compared with last year. The broad consensus is that box office revenue will rise between $500 million and $1 billion this year. Given AMC's 25% share of ticket sales and a profit margin of roughly 65% on additional sales, this would increase operating profit by roughly $75 million to $150 million. Factoring in food and beverage sales, which generate nearly as much profit per patron as ticket sales, an increasing box office could add an additional $125 million to $250 million to operating profits, adding to a total operating profits of $500 million to $600 million. On February 23, AMC announced it was marketing $1.73 billion in new bonds that would be secured by the company's assets and would mature in 2031. The company intends to use these proceeds, plus a newly arranged $750 million bank loan maturing in 2031, to pay off its $2 billion bank loan due in January 2029 and $400 million of its 12.875% secured bonds due in November 2027. If the company is successful, it should have no trouble repaying the $125 million in 6.125% bonds maturing May 15, 2027, and will have no significant debt due after that until May 2029. This would give AMC a long runway to take advantage of the strong lineups of films slated this year and in 2027. We continue to recommend AMC's stock, which is currently trading at $1.17 per share, up to a price of $4.50 a share. Sabre shares fall on sluggish growth. Sabre, Nasdaq. Sabre reported operating results for the quarter and year that ended December 31 that exceeded expectations. For the quarter, revenue rose 3% to $667 million, while operating profit rose 10% to $119 million compared to the same period last year. For the full year of 2025, revenue rose 1% to $2.77 billion, and operating profit rose 10% to $536 million from 2024. The quarterly and full-year improvements were attributable to increased revenue and lower technology costs. Capital expenditure in the quarter was $23 million, as compared with $15 million in the same period last year. Free cash flow rose from $61 million to $116 million. The company ended the quarter with $3.7 billion in debt, adjusted for cash, equating to roughly 7.0x operating profit in 2025. Sabre expects operating income in 2026 to rise to roughly $585 million. Management has done an excellent job rebuilding Sabre's business and profitability over the last 3 years. The company generated an operating loss of $133 million in 2022, a profit of $287 million in 2023, $498 million last year, and $536 million in 2025. In 2025, Sabre refinanced most of its debt. As a result of these transactions, the company has $150 million in debt coming due in 2026 and $202 million in 2027, both of which should be easily managed, since as of December 31, Sabre had $820 million in cash. The company's first meaningful debt maturity is not until June 15, 2029, when $1 billion in bonds come due. As we have written previously, we believe management will have time to continue building Sabre's revenue and profits, and ultimately its share price. The company's stock has fallen sharply, likely on slower than expected growth, and is currently trading at 93 cents per share, well below our buy up to price of $4.50 per share. We emphasize that these shares are volatile, and suitable for risk-tolerant investors. A mixed bag for Peloton, but still looking good on February 5th, Peloton Interactive, NASDAQ, Peyton, reported a mixed bag of operating results for Q2, which ended December 31st. Revenue was below expectations, while operating profit was higher than expected. With the news that Peloton Chief Financial Officer Liz Coddington would leave her post at the end of March to take a job in a privately owned solar energy company, shares declined sharply, falling 25% to $4.39. For the quarter, Peloton reported revenue of $657 million, below the consensus expectation of $675 million. Management attributed much of this shortfall to slower-than-projected purchases of a new generation of connected fitness equipment by current subscribers. Management's revenue projection for the current quarter, ending March 31, is $605 million to $625 million, trailing the expectation of $638 million. For the year, the new revenue projection is $2.4 billion to $2.44 billion, a bit below prior expectations of $2.4 billion to $2.5 billion. Here is the good side of the mixed bag. Operating profit in the quarter was $81.4 million, beating the consensus of $72.5 million. Peloton's outlook for operating profit in the current quarter is $120 million to $135 million, higher than market's projection of $117.5 million. The company raised its projection of operating income for the year to $450 million to $500 million from $425 million to $475 million. Over the last 2 years, Peloton has used the cash it generated to reduce its debt to what is now a very modest level, from 6x operating income to just over 1x. The company now has roughly $1.5 billion in debt and nearly $1.2 billion in cash, which nets out to $320 million, less than this year's operating profit. We believe the sell-off in shares earlier this month is an overreaction. Taking the longer view, operating profit has risen sharply over the last few years, from a loss of $415 million in 2023 to an estimated gain of around $475 million by year-end 2026, June 30. At the current share price of $4.14, the market is valuing Peloton at roughly $2.10 billion. This valuation equates to 4.2x to 4.6x Peloton's projected operating profit of $450 million to $500 million for this current year. This represents an extremely low multiple for almost any company today, particularly one that generated 90% of its operating profit from its subscription services. Until mid-2025, Peloton traded at a multiple that exceeded 10x operating profit. As a reminder, we recommended shares of Peloton in June 2024 when it was trading at $3.58 per share. The stock rose sharply, and on November 11, 2024, with the stock trading at $8.90 per share, we recommended selling half the position. This returned the full amount invested plus a 24% profit. We recommended holding the other half for the duration, which might eventually include a sale of Peloton to a company such as Apple, AAPL, Netflix, NFLX, or Amazon, AMZN. We estimated the shares could rise to $15.32 to $18.54 in the event of a sale. JetBlue's JetForward continues to improve performance. JetBlue Airways, NASDAQ, JBLU, reported results for the quarter that ended December 31 that came in at the high end of projections. Revenue was $2.1 billion, down 2.2% from the same period in 2024. The cost per available seat mile rose 5.4%, toward the bottom of the company's projection of 5.0% to 5.7%. Earnings per share, EPS, were a loss of 49 cents per share, slightly worse than the consensus of a loss of 46 cents per share. Management expects to break even or generate a modest operating profit in 2026 and to generate free cash flow in 2027. JetBlue CEO Joanna Geraghty expects the company's capacity, available seat miles, to increase 2.5% to 4.5% this year based on scheduled aircraft deliveries and fewer planes grounded for engine repair. Management sees revenue per seat mile to rise 2.0% to 5.0%. From instituting first-class seating and selling a higher percentage of premium tickets and costs, excluding fuel, to rise 1% to 3%. The company continues to make progress on its JetForward strategy, a cost-cutting measure and revenue booster, which is expected to increase operating profits by $800 million to $900 million from 2025 through 2027. The program achieved $305 million in these improvements in 2025, $15 million above its stated target of $290 million. Management expects to achieve additional savings of $310 million this year. We repeat our recommendation to buy JetBlue stock, currently trading at $5.57 per share, up to $7 per share. We emphasize that JetBlue represents a volatile and risky stock that has significant potential upside based on long-term improvements in operations and potentially a sale to another air carrier like Southwest Airlines, LUV. Xerox issues warrants, potentially helping bondholders. In the quarter that ended December 31, Xerox Holdings, NASDAQ, XRX, reported revenue of $2.03 billion, roughly 1% short of the consensus estimate of $2.05 billion. Operating profits declined from $104 million to $102 million, reflecting the acquisition of printer manufacturer Lexmark and overall softness in the print business, new equipment, supplies, and managed printing services. EPS of 10 cents fell short of the consensus estimate of 29 cents. The company sees revenue of $7.5 billion for the year, and it is expecting operating profit in the range of $450 million to $500 million. Management projects that the company will generate $250 million of cash after capital expenditures. The company reaffirmed its target of at least $300 million of additional savings related to the acquisition of Lexmark. These savings will be recurring, and in addition to roughly $200 million of cost cuts remaining in its Xerox Reinvented program. The company repaid $110 million in debt during the quarter, and as of December 31 had $512 million in cash. Total debt at the end of the quarters equates to 6.7x the operating profit for the last 12 months. Debt excluding loans secured by loans and leases to Xerox's customers, which will be paid off as they mature, equates to a relatively modest 3.4x operating profits. Xerox has roughly $200 million in debt coming due in 2026 and 2027, which should be manageable given its level of cash. The company's first substantial maturity is May 2028, when it has $750 million of 5.5% bonds coming due. After these results were released, Xerox announced two steps that are likely to bolster the finances. On February 12, the company announced that it was distributing two-year warrants to shareholders and owners of its convertible bonds. The company will distribute one warrant for each two shares of stock, or stock into which bonds can be converted. For the 3.75% convertible bonds maturing March 15, 2030, which we recommended in October 2025, this should mean the distribution of approximately 24 XRX shares. The warrants entitle the holder to purchase one share of Xerox stock at $8 per share over the next 2 years. On its face, with shares trading at $1.81, this would seem to be a long shot, but there's a clever provision that permits using Xerox bonds at face value to pay for exercising the warrants. With bonds like the 3.75% convertible bonds trading at roughly $300, this really means the effective exercise price is $2.40 per share, $8 of bonds that paid for with bonds that currently cost 30 cents on the dollar. If Xerox can deliver on the benefits of the Lexmark acquisition, a big if, the price of its stock should rise, leading some warrant holders to buy bonds to pay for the shares. If successful, Xerox could issue up to 78 million shares and potentially reduce its debt by as much as $624 million. On February 14, Xerox announced it formed a joint venture with TPG, a venerable private equity firm, to own and license many Xerox patents. The agreement calls for Xerox to contribute its intellectual property in exchange for $450 million, already raised by the joint venture, and shares in the enterprise. The company disclosed that it will use this cash to execute its long-term strategy, which may include buying back some of its bonds in the open market. At current market prices, each dollar spent to repurchase its bonds would reduce the company's debt by $3. We believe that Xerox is taking productive steps to stabilize its business and improve its finances. Though the situation is highly risky, we continue to recommend Xerox's 3.75% convertible bonds that mature March 15, 2030, currently trading at $290 per $1,000 of face value. Houlihan Lokey reports strong. Results. Houlihan Lokey, NYSE, HLI, reported very strong results for its Q3 2026, which ended December 31. Revenue was $717 million, up 13% from the same period last year. Revenue in its corporate finance business rose 13% to $474 million, and for the financial and valuation advisory segment rose 6%. The financial restructuring business had revenue of $156 million, up 19% from the same period last year. Houlihan recorded EPS of $1.70, 22% above $1.39 per share in the same period last year, and declared a 60 cents per share cash dividend. Houlihan's business model continues to perform well in both strong markets, when the corporate finance business flourishes, and weak markets, when the financial restructuring business becomes increasingly profitable. Trading at $165, HLI shares remain well above our buy up to price of $105 and 81% above where we recommended them in March 2023. Icon Hedges bolster bondholders. Icon Enterprises, NASDAQ, IEP, reported its results for the quarter that ended December 31st. The value of the company's assets after debt declined 17% to $3.17 billion from $3.82 billion on September 30th. The loss was largely attributable to a $778 million decline in the value of IEP's holdings in oil refiner CVR Energy, partly offset by a $262 increase in the company's investment in Icon-related funds. As a reminder, the company, and the funds in which it invests, purchases hedges to protect the value of IEP's portfolio in the event of a significant decline in stock market averages. While these hedges reduce the portfolio's return in good markets, they are valuable in limiting the downside in bad ones. We view them as protection for bondholders, who are secured by the IEP assets. We calculate that bondholders' safety cushion, the amount the portfolio could decline before becoming worth less than IEP's total borrowings, fell to 41% from 43% as of September 30th. We continue to recommend Icon Enterprises 9.75% bonds, currently trading at $995, up to a price of $1,020, which would equate to an annual yield of roughly 9%. Martin Fridson Porter & Company. Stevenson, Maryland. For important disclosures and disclaimers, please visit our legal disclosures page. Thank you for being a paid subscriber to Porter & Company. We hoped you enjoyed this audio issue. In addition to this issue, you should check out our top 3 best buys, where we highlight 3 current portfolio picks that are at an attractive buy point today. You can find the top 3 best buys under the Best Buys link on our site at porterandcompanyresearch.com.